Hi, and welcome to another episode of This Everyday Holy. I'm your host, Mihi Kim Court. Lord, it's hot. I know I might lose all credibility saying this out loud, but I'm ready for summer to be over. Usually I last until end of July-ish and into August. That's when I usually feel sort of ready for fall. But today it's 91 degrees. And I know for those of you who are down south or maybe in Florida, you probably think I'm the biggest weenie, but I feel like a bloated, sweaty beached whale. When did summer get to be so not restful and exhausting? I think I'm ready for a change. Okay, today I have another guest with us, Reverend Kelly Shriver. It's been really fun to have these conversations. Kelly was actually my first guinea pig. Thank you, Kelly. Kelly is a Presbyterian minister, a teaching elder, as we say in our denomination. She is a solo pastor in Milan, Michigan, right near Ann Arbor. And Kelly and I have become friends through the Young Clergy Women Project, a network for young clergy women of all stripes and communities, where she has been serving on the board forever and is one of the chairs. She and I have hung out a few times. I mean, she really is such a great friend, a pastor that I admire and respect a great deal, a leader with a really important voice. She's one of those, when you have a conversation with her for the first time, she's very authentic, very open, and very competent. There's just something about her confidence and her poise and her grace that I just really am drawn to. And so she is someone to keep an eye on within the church, the wider church and the denomination especially. So anyways, we had a really nice time talking about ministry and motherhood, parenthood. Interspersed throughout this episode are audio clips from her home. She's married to John and they have three beautiful boys. One recently arrived this past summer. So you can imagine the sort of insanity in their house these last couple of months. So extra thankful for her time and for her willingness to be a part of this conversation. Okay, so the text that we used comes from John 15. I think you know the passage. It reads, "I am the true vine, and my Father is a vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I've spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches." So there's much more that she'll go into, and it's a little bit, it's a neat way to hear a little bit of her backstory as well. Now here's just a quick little sort of qualifier about the audio. I used Hangouts on air to record our conversation, but I think I forgot to turn on the fancy mic, and it ended up recording my voice through the shitty internal laptop mic, so I sound horrific, but Kelly sounds really awesome. So I've cut out a lot of my own sort of perspective and conversations and questions, which I'll provide later on. But I've mostly provided her commentary with some of my own reflections recorded separately. Every once in a while when she's talking, you'll hear a grunt of affirmation from me that just has terrible audio quality. So I apologize for any annoyance or suffering on your ears. I hope to figure it out soon. Maybe this was too much information, but I wanted to acknowledge that I'm still figuring this out, and I am thankful that you all are still sticking with me. Okay, so here's Kelly.
Yeah, so I actually wasn't like super taken with it at first, because I think I tend to read passages like this, and my first thought is like, oh, we're going to talk about things being thrown into the fire and burned. Like, this is not the direction I want to go in. But I grew up in Eastern Washington in Spokane. And so whenever something pops up in the lectionary that has anything to do with grapes or wheat, which are two huge regional crops, I tend to kind of go for it because I know that. Like, it feels like home, and especially serving a church in Michigan right now, which feels a little displaced for me. at times. I like to, I mean, my church could tell you I preach way too much on like farming practices from my home community, which is not helped by the fact that John, my husband, works for a farming company right now. So I preach on farming sort of an indecent amount for someone who has no actual hands-on practical farming experience in my own life. But, you know, it makes me feel like I'm at home for a little while.
No, I haven't seen the treasure cart.
Mama, it's a new book.
I think Mama's familiar with it.
Yeah, I know. There was one in our bedroom. Let me go look. Enoch, could you leave your glasses on?
Oh, yeah, and Monkey, I have your clothes. Do you want to put your clothes on?
So I love pretty much any passage that has to do with, like, plants, especially cultivated plants in scripture, because they tend to touch, especially this passage touches really well on questions of seasonality. And then also this one specifically brings up pruning, which is kind of an image I've been sitting with for a while recently. And they're definitely different, but interrelated. So for me, seasonality is something that's become something of a mantra, like in my parenting, but also in my life as a solo pastor and as a spouse and a sister and a daughter and everything else. I just sort of view almost everything in my life as a season. Like, you know, the kids are, I don't know, sleeping through the night, which is super great. And I remind myself it's a season and this will end at some point in time. Or if something really horrible is going on, like we're having, you know, tons of potty accidents or whatever, I just remind myself, like, this is just a season. Like, by the time they're fourth graders, we are not going to be dealing with pooping our pants anymore, I hope. And, you know, there's something sort of helpful for me about realizing that things always change, mm-hmm. and that part of being a mom or a pastor or anything else and doing that well is just my own ability to be flexible and adjust to the needs of the season that my family or my church or I myself am in and what that is going to ask of me.
I've got a dog and he's got me. We get along so easy.
Okay, I didn't find the treasure card. I found the paper boy. Moses, can I take your temperature real quick? Okay, so he doesn't have a temperature?
Nope.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
No, I mean, the
peeking
is enough for me to know he's sick.
Well, I'm gonna pass a bit
pretty and a bit. I'm getting 99, but that's not exactly
that. All right, ready, guys? I'm gonna read John Henry.
Yeah, so that's sort of something I live with a lot, but when I was reading this passage, I was also thinking about, I mean, it talks a lot about, like, bearing fruit and being fruitful, and otherwise you get cut off and thrown into the fire and whatnot, but I was sort of thinking about this idea that there's no such thing as a plant that's fruitful all the time. In fact, that's like totally unhealthy to try to force plants to be constantly fruitful. Mm-hmm. And being fruitful for a lot of plants, especially for grapes, is actually a very short sort of season. Grapevines, like wheat fields and like other things, need to have these long dry seasons where they sit fallow and nothing's happening. And then they have these long seasons where all they do is they grow leaves, or like the grapes themselves start out like really tiny and sour, and they take a long time to mature to the point where their sugars are developed to the right amount, whether they be for eating or for making wine or whatever else. And that when the fruit is ready, it happens all of a sudden, and it's usually like most, if not the entire vineyard. And you have a very short window in which to actually go out and pick all this fruit that's on the vine. And I think sometimes we read about being fruitful and we think we have to be productive all the time. But in actuality, plants are fruitful for, in a truly productive sense, very, very little of their whole life. And most of their life is spent in preparation for those moments. And I don't know, there's something about that resonates with me as someone who likes to constantly have something to show for my own work all the time.
Well, I won't win a prize for being dog pretty at a fancy show in the great big city is a fix of the hound and I don't know what.
Yeah, and I think especially with like little kids, this is something I don't know, like we have some friends who come over and I really love them and they're fabulous and are great parents, but their son who's just a little older than my four-year-old, Enoch, is in one of these schools where like at the age of five, they like spend time every day sitting and writing in their journal and they're like reading all these long books and like his parents are constantly like love to tell John and I about all the wonderful like academic achievements of their five-year-old. And John and I are sitting there like, you know, I don't think that's what we want for Enoch right now, because there's going to be plenty of time for that kind of learning, but I don't know. It just doesn't always resonate. And I worry sometimes that what we equate as being productive, as, you know, parents gauging our own kids or as workers or whatever it ends up looking at. I often wonder, is that really productivity that we're measuring, or are we measuring the appearance of productivity? And which is actually more helpful? I don't know. I'm especially noticing this now because Enoch just got glasses and we discovered, we had no idea. There were no warning signs, nothing that was happening, but he's like basically blind in his left eye, we discovered. And, we were really lucky to catch it. It was something that we only caught because we took him to the ophthalmologist to get his eyes checked. And, you know, I sort of sat there and thought, if we hadn't caught this now, when he did start working more intently on reading and writing skills in the next year or two, that would have really been easily chalked up to like an attention issue or a learning issue, or, you know, little boys just don't like to focus on this, rather than understanding he actually could not see the page in front of him. So I don't know, it feels like in some way related to productivity, being able to give ourselves the space also to allow for new and unexpected things to occur that need to be addressed. I don't know, just something I'm sort of sitting with. Parents? I don't know. I think probably this isn't related just to parenting, but parenting is sort of my world right now. So, you know, it's the water I'm swimming in. And I'm thinking about this idea that like, there are, I recently had to back out of a, like a little pastoral leadership cohort program that I was really excited about. And professionally, it was a really, really good decision for me to be a part of. But I just sort of finally realized like, you know, I'll have a 4-month-old at the time, and while on one hand I am fully capable of traveling with a nursing infant, on the other hand, like, I've been gone a lot so far this year from my other two kids, and my husband is feeling the strain of that, and it was just one of those decisions that the longer I thought about it, the easier it became to say, this does not fit with the season that I am in right now, and it was a really sort of hard and painful decision because professionally it felt like the right choice, but at the same time I had to take a step back and say, like, for the season my family is in right now, this is the choice that honors that vocation in my life, and my call to be present with my family, and that there will be other opportunities, like, you know, this wasn't the last great, you know, professional development piece that I was ever going to be invited to, and it's not going to irrevocably destroy my career not to do it. I don't know. So it's just sort of been a way of inserting a little bit of patience into my world, which is, I'm not always super patient.
Mommy. Daddy.
And I think that's hard for me because I know my own limits and I know I'm capable of things. It's not always the best decision, and that's okay. And then that was actually the other piece of this passage, to be the good pastor who brings us back to scripture after all, that, you know, kind of stuck out to me is this image of pruning, was really impactful to me when I sat down to start working on this passage this week, because I really feel like that's a lot of what's happening in my world right now and what I'm sort of starting to allow to happen. And so the reason you prune like a grapevine is because the grapevines, like other plants, have this tendency to send out lots of suckers in lots of different directions and have all sorts of little branches. And the more branches they have, they're sending all this energy from their root system to many different places. And so when you go and you cut off the smaller branches that aren't producing as well, what you're allowing the plant to do is actually put all of its energy from its roots into the main vine that's growing really well. And so sometimes I read this passage, and the thing that comes to mind when they talk about, like, you know, chopping off the branches and throwing them in the fire and whatnot, I sort of think we have a tendency to read that like, well, I'm gonna be the good vine and I'm gonna produce things because I love Jesus, and that person over there, they're the bad branch who doesn't love Jesus the same way I do, so they're gonna get thrown into the fire and I'm going to be, you know, the good vine attached to Jesus, et cetera, et cetera. But I really wonder if this passage is more about the fact that we all have both the good productive vines in us, and we all have the tendency to grow these bits and pieces of ourselves that are not productive, not fruitful. And it might just be not fruitful for a season, but those things need to go so that we're not putting our energy toward things that for right now don't matter. They aren't life-giving to us or to the world. The other day, so John works at this company where they use like satellite imagery and rainfall data and weather and all these different data points. And then he's the head of research and development. And they take all this data and they put it together, and they then give it back to farmers to try to help them make the right decisions for their individual fields based on the actual like data science behind farming. And so John was telling me one of the hardest things with farmers is that if they have two fields, one that's producing, say, like 50 bushels an acre, and one that's producing 80 bushels an acre, farmers' natural inclination, and this is totally human, I get this, is that they're going to want to put more fertilizer and more time and energy and more seed into that 50 bushels an acre field to try to get it up to where the 80 bushels an acre field is. And John said what they're noticing in the data more and more is that that field that's already producing at 80 bushels an acre has proved itself to be a more fertile field. So you are better off putting your time and labor into the 80 bushels an acre field because you, for the same amount of time and energy, that 80 bushels might become 120 bushels, whereas your 50 bushels, you might only get up to like 60 or 70 bushels. So you have an exponential growth in a more fertile field. And I was just sort of thinking, well, and then I was like, oh, that's a great sermon illustration. And then he gave me like a 30-minute lecture on agronomics and like all the like variations of, you know, all the ways that this actually works. And actually, I was like, I don't care about this, John. I just need the illustration for a sermon, right?
Yeah.
But it sort of like it resonated with me in the sense of like that same image of pruning, like putting our energy toward the areas that are already life-giving for us and where we already feel gifted, and, you know, sitting with our kids or our churches or what have you in those spaces where we already feel life, rather than constantly putting our energy into those areas where we know we need improvement. And I'm not saying ignore it entirely, but at the same time, it's not going to give us the same feedback's the wrong word. What's the word I'm looking for? It's not going to give us the same result for equal or more energy than those life-giving areas.
They're going to eat their eggs. Their eggs are strong and fast.
Because that helps.
I want some carrots.
That helps.
You want carrots?
That helps Jack. I see so far.
You don't have carrots.
Okay, I'm strawberries.
have some more eggs, Hannah?
No. Yeah.
You
want
to tell us what
Gab was?
Did they have turkey yesterday?
Hey, Mom, do you know what? Hey, Mom, Gab was a bat. The bat.
Yeah, so why
do
you color it in
spots? Because Anna helped me. Mine colored in red.
Is it Friday?
So, did Anna help you or did you do that yourself? And did Desmond help you, or did you do that all by yourself?
I did this a bit as a bite of pinch.
Nobody likes my eggs.
Just say them.
I really loved thinking about John 15 in this way, thinking a lot about sort of the fallow seasons that Kelly spoke about and sort of talked us through. And I think that that is something that will stay with me for a little bit, just a reminder that we need those dry seasons. We need those seasons where we're not producing anything, that we're not giving or doing or chasing after something all the time. And I think that's hard for a lot of us. I think that's really hard for people who are used to having something 9 to 5, having responsibilities, having something to sort of, legitimize their existence, not only just legitimize their sort of skills and the degrees that we worked for and the time that we spent in whatever profession and work, but to trust the presence of God, even in the midst of those quiet seasons, those seasons where life is still there, but just waiting beneath the surface. And then again, the conversation around pruning, I think that that is something as consumers, as Americans, that we have a really tough time with in terms of trying to consume less. And there are so many books and so many blogs and so many resources, continuous conversations about how do we live minimally and how do we live with less and live happily. And I think that that is something that we'll continue to talk about and trying in terms of trying to sort out and sort of find a balance in our lives. But I think that the mandate or sort of this impetus and example from scripture, I think, is really compelling in terms of to pour into and to pursue those things that are life-giving. So that truly more is less, but less is more. And so again, so thankful for Kelly and her perspective and for her honesty and the chance to just kind of sit and think through those really, really, really important sort of pieces of our spirituality and faith. You know, that we do need those seasons of quiet and those seasons of less. And once we sort of, to take Sheryl Sandberg's words, once we lean into those seasons, who knows what they will produce later on. So thank you again to Kelly and to her family, and for the chance to sort of glimpse their lives, and for the reminder again of the grace of all those seasons, and for the ebb and flow that we just, that we feel and experience all around us, and the reminder that God is always present and God is constant in the midst of all this change, whatever changes there may be every day. So thanks again for listening to another episode of This Everyday Holy, Ordinary Living in the Lectionary.
Go ahead, do all of them. One last.